A local poet visits today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Our guest today is Barbara Bloom, who brings some of her poetry to Scribble. Barb, it's been, what, less than 3 months since we met at a meeting of Quint City's poets?
Right.
What drew you to that?
I saw it in the newspaper and the article, and I thought it would be good to visit. I'm a member of the Iowa Poetry Association, recently settled here, and I was looking for poetry groups, and that struck my eye. So
you've been into poetry for a while, huh?
Since high school, so that's been a while.
What got you into poetry? Usually high school is where everybody gets turned off by poetry.
Well, we had a wonderful English teacher, Wallace Geary, who decided to call it proettes, pros and poets.
Okay.
And basically there were more girls, of course, than boys. But it was very interesting because we did have prose writers and poets, and it was very... very interesting, and at that age, you write about a lot of feelings. You know, we wrote a lot about being a teenager, and it was interesting. And I have a lot of those poems still that I've kept.
Well, isn't that what poets do all their lives? Write about feelings?
Well, maybe not so raw. As I didn't get asked to the prom, you know, things like that. You know? Maybe in different levels, but
shouldn't poetry be raw? I mean, you raise an interesting question. One of the reasons I like this program is that at the end I end up thinking. I don't know whether the guest ever ends up thinking about the program, but how raw should poetry be? I mean, isn't poetry telling it like it really is, rather than kind of covering it up and sweet and syrupy?
Well, you're right. Some of my poetry is like that.
Well,
it does come through.
Yeah, he may be right. Then you have T.S. Eliot, where a lot of stuff is covered up. You have a heck of a time sometimes trying to figure out what he's talking about. Right. How do you mean raw, Tweet?
Well, talk about your real feelings rather than, most of us, if you ask a three-year-old what she thinks of Grandma's hat, she'll tell you it stinks, right?
Right.
By the time she's 10, she'll say, well, it's sort of like you, Grandma, right?
Uh-huh.
And by the time she's in her 20s, she'll say, it's just wonderful, Grandma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So see how your feelings have changed?
No, you're lying.
No, your feelings haven't changed.
Okay, maybe poetry does that too.
You've gotten
it covers up
raw.
Some of that. It covers
some. One of the advantages of poetry is that it tells it like it is and it doesn't syrup it up.
Usually, I think.
Well, why is it then that so much modern poetry is so convoluted and obscure?
Well, ask her because she writes poetry.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about the folks that you read about in Poetry Magazine and so on.
I do not understand a lot of what is going on in contemporary poetry. I've taught poetry for, 40 years, but
that stuff awakes a raw emotion in me, I'll tell you.
It's really hard for me to read because it's so abstract.
It is,
a lot
yeah.
of it, and it's very hard to read.
Why is that, that so many genres have to become complicated? One of the indications that you are in a legitimate profession, a legitimate discipline, is when you develop your own language, your own words, and you're talking to the initiate rather than to everybody. And that can be a real problem, particularly in science. We need to have science in the public arena more, but they got to learn to speak English,
mm-hmm.
Or at least some plain language, because it gets so obscure you can't follow it. And things we desperately need to know, we have to wait for so-called popularizers to come along and help explain. But in poetry, don't you think that's happened too? That's gotten just too
bad? It's happened in mm-hmm. also, I mean, it's happening in fiction too. You very seldom read a novel today that's chronological, right? It has got to skip back and forth and here and there and 10 different voices. I'm not sure why that's happened, but it really, it's not just poetry. It's happened almost everywhere.
Well, I think we're more susceptible to fads than people realize. I just heard that, I can't recall the details, but there's some natural place that some popular star, singer, or something visited or did a video there. And so thousands of people are crowding into this place, so many they have to close it down because it's being destroyed. I think, why do you want to go there? Just because you saw somebody you liked in a video. But this fadism seems to, you know, we seem to run from one enthusiasm to another.
Well, let's hear a poem from Barbara, and then we can use that as an example.
Okay, that sounds fair.
All right. This one's titled One More Time. The stars and the moon were eyes to the birth, one mother, then one more. Through the years, the centuries, the millennia, giving birth on bare ground, hot desert sand, pine needle bedding, in cold dark caves, rocking boats, rainy nights. Jane felt the energy, the pull, the blood of all the mothers behind her, the strong, the weak, the lazy, the cruel, the brave, the open wombs. As her pulse quickened, her heart stepped backward, then forward. Her body follows the earth's tide, and Jane gives birth.
That's very interesting. How would you classify that?
I understood it. Right? Which probably means that Poetry Magazine wouldn't take it.
you better tart that up a little bit if the old understood it.
No, I really like that.
Yeah.
Why don't we, using that poem as an example, take us through how that poem came about?
Genealogy interests me, and I wonder, what was my great-great-great-great-great-grandmother like? Where was she when she gave birth? What were her conditions? You know, I'll never know. We never know. And that's, it's just sad to me that we don't know that much more about where we came from. And, I mean, did that grandmother give birth in a dark cave? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, somewhere back there they did, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there a line that came first? Or, I mean, you start out with this idea now of where your ancestors...
Nope, not one line.
Was it the idea? Did the idea occur to you? Or were you asking yourself a question?
I was asking myself a question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. What happened?
And you supplied an answer. I was surprised when you came to that first meeting and you read poetry, and I wondered, where did she come from? Because that's really a good poem. And your friend Don came at the last meeting and read his first poem, and I thought, wow, how did he do that?
Well, he says it was my influence, but I think it was there because, you know, he had thought about it. I know he had thought about telling his children, you know, about things to remember.
Is poetry in everybody?
I don't think so.
Why do you take that grim of view?
I know some men and women who are very into the technical world, and I cannot see them sitting down and writing anything except something to do with their project or something mm-hmm. technology, you know, I can't see them doing it.
So, I mean, there is that long-standing argument. Was it Coleridge that said poets are born, not made? I think maybe it wasn't Coleridge. And Emerson, on the other hand, says every human being alive is a poet.
They just don't know it, right?
Right.
That's the same.
And it might be that your civil engineers don't know they are. But When did you come to realize you were a poet? I mean,
I think, in high school I enjoyed it. It was a club to go to.
Right.
And it was fun. I like words. I like to read a lot. And it was fun to play with words and to get some of my emotions out from being a teenager. And then after having some children and reading, more children's books to them and always reading, and I just sat down one day and started writing, just...
Let me ask another question about this poem you've just read. I've tried this out on every poet we've had for the past year, but Jane Hirschfield, who was one of my really favorite contemporary poets, wrote a book on writing poetry in which she says the following: no good poem is ever entirely safe.
Oh, really? Not entirely safe.
Do you think that is always kind of an... And in a way, right, as you describe this poem, you're almost nostalgic. We'll never know. We'll never know, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's the dark edge in this.
That
essentially
is true.
Positive poem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
which prevents it... This would never appear on a Hallmark card.
No, right? No, it wouldn't.
Which is a good sign, right? Hallmark cards are safe.
True.
Right?
True.
All my stuff would work on a Hallmark card.
Then it's verse, not poetry.
Let's not get into that fight again. So, let's hear another poem here, shall we?
All right. This is one that I just read last week at the club. What did I say? Covered in her faded apron, Mother stood at the sink, out of her mouth, head tilted. What did I say? Hunched over in the backyard, Uncle with his gnarly hands, curly black hair and deep voice. What did I say? Mrs. York on her porch, hands at hip, nail polish glistening in the sun, turned toward the children in the street. What did I say? Harry Brown, back to the class, writing on the blackboard, turned quickly. What did I say? They're all dead. Now I can say.
That's very good.
So what brought that about?
I like to go through sayings, quotes, familiar things people say. And what did I say just kind of caught me.
And inflection is everything with
right.
that. What
right.
did I say? What did I say? That's very good.
Is poetry for you a hobby or is it a calling?
It's a calling.
Is it? Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
A hobby, I think you could leave it
okay.
some days and come back. But poetry, I have to write about every day.
Do you write every day?
Mm-hmm. I do. This is full of, this notebook is full of starts and endings and beginnings.
You write longhand.
I do, until I think it's okay to write on the computer. But
how much editing do you do? I mean, you got many pages of writing there. What is it? How do you do that? Do you, after you write something and then you write something else, then do you go back and check and see, should I work on this? Should I revise this?
Mm-hmm. I do. But usually what comes out stays.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't do much revising.
Spontaneous overflow of powerful feelings.
So how long does it take you? That poem you just read. Once you got the idea.
Once I got the idea, maybe 15 minutes.
Okay.
Half hour,
That's not fair.
No, well, Rebecca Weeb, one of the poets at Augie, it's not unlike her to take months to write a poem.
Really?
Yeah.
Catherine, who heads up the Quint Cities Poet, says quite often she doesn't think about it, and then she realizes a meeting is coming up in 2 or 3 days,
right.
So she dashes off a poem.
20 minutes, she said.
And it is a stunner.
Right.
At meeting after meeting, one stunner after another, and I think... That's not fair. You should be doing this for a living because that's great stuff.
Uh-huh.
And if it's that easy, just crank one out every day.
But sometimes they're not that good as hers are.
Well, that's true. That's true. Quality, shifts around. Have you got another right. poem you can let us look at?
Goodness, let's see. Oh, this is one I just wrote. Not a good title, but it's called The Old Timer. Shuffling through the aisles of Hy-Vee, the master baker of grandkids' cookies and neighbors' coffee cakes eyes the baking utensils section. Last week she'd made muffins, breaking the handle of the largest measuring cup. The baker selects the nestled measuring cups, shiny, strong, and 20% off. In the cart they go, along with lettuce, tuna, tomatoes, tea, brown sugar, and bread. Her granddaughter is coming for lunch, the one who loves her tuna sandwiches. Very basic, I know.
Well, it's well stated. What's your reaction to that one, Quinn?
I like all of these. I mean, I can understand
them. Yeah, that's
them,
the frustrating thing about Barbara. Everything I've heard her read is good. What do you think the process at Quint City's Poets Meeting when you read a poem and then they start to take it apart?
I like that.
You do?
I do. I like that because I need that.
So what do they say? How do they take yours apart?
It's usually grammar, something with the grammar. That's usually it, I think.
Well, yeah, it's there's not much to go. Dale Hockey, of course, is there, and so he's very precise. But there are some interesting people in that group. And by the way, it's open to anybody. If you got a dollar, come on in. Put a dollar on the table and you're in the group. That's the first Wednesday of every month from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Bettendorf Public Library. And if Tweet had any courage at all, he'd show up.
Well, I would. I do. I wrote a poem for the last time, and then I couldn't make it. So,
who squealed that time?
Not me.
Well, you'll have to come next time.
Well, I should. I should. I could read my... I don't know what's going on.
I don't know either.
Anyway, you're a member of the Iowa Poets group. Do you publish in Lyrical Iowa?
I have, the last 3 years.
Okay.
I have, Waiting to hear about this year. I don't know if my poem got selected
okay.
or not.
Just, what do you send in, one poem? Or
you can send in, I think, three or five.
Okay.
I can't remember. It's an odd number. Can't remember for sure. How many we can send in. But and it's interesting because there are people that were in my Proets group in high school who are also published in there. So they're still writing. So it's interesting.
Well, Barbara, I would say just keep on writing because it's you obviously have the gift and the inclination, and now you're taking the time to write something every day. That is the recipe, isn't it?
It is the recipe, yes.
Okay, well, Barbara Bloom, you just moved to the Quad Cities.
Right, Geneseo area.
Well, that's practically the Quad Cities.
It is practically, yes.
I remember when we were talking about unifying the Quad Cities,
right.
trying to think of a name. Bill Hewitt said, why don't we just call it West Geneseo?
I remember that contest. That was...
That didn't win, though,
I think
right?
the one that came in second was Mississippi's. Twain got rejected.
Well, we're not going to reject your poems, and I hope to see one of your poems in Lyrical Iowa. Thank you very much, Barbara Bloom.
Thank you.
And so we delve into the book bag after that interesting session of poetry by Barbara Bloom. I wish I could write as easily as Barbara seems to.
Right. Yeah, 10 minutes?
15, she said. Let's be honest. She took a whole 15 minutes to write it.
It is astounding.
Yeah. Well, what's astounding is I wrote a poem, not just one. I wrote two poems about you, Tweet.
Oh.
Which I presented to the Quint City Poets meeting.
And did they critique me or the poem?
Well, the thing is, it was there for your edification, and you didn't show up.
I do plan on attending one of these days. It's hard for me to get out at night.
Yeah, well,
my night vision is not very good.
You know, that's true. I don't.
The poem I wrote is not very good.
We can do something about the driving.
I know. Yeah. I could have cataract surgery, I guess.
But actually, the poem I wrote about you is really pretty good. I keep forgetting to bring it in to show it to you, but I think I should make you wait till you come to one of those meetings.
Well, okay, that you've got my curiosity.
But in the meantime, book bag, anything in there that we should be looking at?
I have spent most of the winter reading about nature and the environment and things like that, just because I've gotten off on that, and I've got a whole slew of books to recommend that are really good books about nature. And then 2 weeks ago, I veered off to something that Don Erickson handed off to me. And it's a book by a writer named Charles Foster called The Sacred Journey. And it turns out it's one of eight volumes in a series that that talks about the rites of various religions that all religions share. For instance, tithing of some sort, prayer of some sort, the meal, whether it's communion or eating together or in other ways. And then the church year and the Sabbath. I did read the third one in this series called the Sabbath, which is on the whole Jewish idea of keeping the Sabbath and what that means. The last one, it turns out almost every religion has some form of pilgrimage, and mm-hmm. The sacred journey is that pilgrimage that, for instance, Muslims are supposed to take to Mecca at least once in their lifetimes, or the Jewish toast at the Cedar and other things next year in Jerusalem.
I have a friend who makes these pilgrimages on foot in Spain from one cathedral city to another. Yeah, so there are all kinds of pilgrimages.
Well, there's Canterbury Tales, there's the Crusades. I mean, so this turns out to be a really fascinating book, not only... And his claim is that if you're on a Sunday, you're sitting in church listening to a sermon, naughty you, right? that almost Jesus' first words when he called his first disciple Matthew was, "Follow me." Uh-huh. And Matthew got up and followed, and they never stopped, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Paul is doing. In the Acts of the Apostles, Paul is making all these journeys everywhere. That it is in the heart of Christianity to be a pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to thinking about, you know, that the whole idea of pilgrimage is not necessarily walking from place to place, but the way you read a book or the way you live your life. And so I thought I'd start out this section by asking you if you had to pick a metaphor as you look back over your life. Have you been a pilgrim? Have you been an explorer? Have you been a tourist? I know you haven't been a tourist. Twain doesn't like people who go through life as tourists.
I've been a wanderer. I will follow one path for a while. And then sometimes, to my surprise, veer off to another path. And then it's pretty much what I've done. I was in broadcast. I planned to be first a priest, then a teacher. I wound up being a broadcaster in radio and then in television. And then I got into classical theater on the side. And I taught school on the side. And then I wandered into politics on a sudden, abrupt change in life and came back to radio. And along the way, got talked into doing some writing. And it's all been kind of a wandering around exploring ideas.
But wander is not the same as lost, right?
No. Mm-mm.
And at all.
I don't know where it's from in Tolkien, but you see T-shirts with the Tolkien phrase on it every once in a while. Not all who wander are lost.
Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, the wandering is in pursuit of something. It's to go for some kind of objective or to achieve an ideal, to make real an idea that seems compelling. You know, there are all sorts of reasons to wander off in some direction. And my problem, it wasn't a problem, I thought it was great. I was at one time wandering in three different directions at the same time. And often through my life, I've thought, is there a unity in any of this? Can you find a straight path in the middle of all this wandering? And I think it's the compulsion to communicate, but to communicate as a teacher. You want to spread ideas and to develop knowledge and so on. And as you learn, you want to give that to others. I use the image quite often when you're at a comedy and something funny happens, you nudge the person next to you. Did you get that? And it seems I've spent all my life nudging people.
Right.
You know, did you get that? Did you see that?
Right.
Did you look at this? And, but, you know, trying to make sense of any life is sometimes pretty tough.
Well, you know, you look at that. That's the claim of this Charles Foster, is that wandering is built into our genes or something. And that you look at human migration patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And how humans, once humans became humans, how they spread.
Yeah.
You know, we thought that the Native Americans came over the land bridge from Siberia and China, and that they must be genetically like the current residents there. It turns out their genetics is completely different. And
yeah.
It turns out that's because way back 14,000 years ago, when they came over the land bridge, the people who inhabited Asia are totally different from the people who inhabit Asia today.
Oh, yeah. They found a new batch of them up, too, in the far reaches of Siberia.
Right.
The discoveries about the origin of humanity are just staggering.
Yeah, but we wander, right? Move. On
oh,
the
yeah.
move.
That's true. That's true. You always stay on the move, and people have spread around the world for a variety of motives. I was reading a book on the pioneers about how the motivation was to go to the Northwest Territory to start a new life, to, you know, achieve something, to become wealthy. They had all kinds of ideas. But, yeah, we do wander, and I think we wandered a bit, too. Time to look for a theme here and kind of wander out of the studio. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We've been wandering here in this program we call Scribble, and we plan to wander back next week and hope you will too.